Blog Talk Radio.
Yesterday, getting a little older as we go forth. Just glad to be here and glad to be on this side of the earth, you know, on top of the ground, and as those would say. But glad that y'all could come in. We got two beautiful women that's going to be here this evening. But first, before we get into them, we're going to get with DV. How you doing this evening?
What's good with you, man? Happy belated.
Yeah, man, I had a good time, man, this weekend. I took it on out and did what I had to do, and now I'm back.
But you know my saying, better be seen than viewed. So, you know,
that's right. That's right. That's right. Yes, right. Yeah, yeah. 53 years young and going on forward and moving on and still doing what I always do. But yeah, we're gonna keep celebrating the rest of the month. But as we go forward, we got two women that's gonna be here this evening, and I'm gonna bring them in right now and have them introduce themselves because I think one of them has a goal. But we're gonna go ahead and go forth. So we're gonna start with 312, who is Miss Crystal. How you doing this evening?
I'm good, and yourself?
I am doing just fine. And also we have Yara. How are you?
Hello, I'm wonderful.
And say hello to my co-host, Mr. DV Hint.
Hey, hey, DV.
Hey.
I'm Yara.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
Damn, they gave you a great greeting there, DV. What's that about? Anyway, we'll go forth. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to go in, and just so you know, ladies, I hope y'all understand, you know, you didn't get questions from me, so what does that tell you? That tells you that we're going to be shooting from the hip like we always do on Word Sexy Radio, and this is Grown Folks Radio, so you can say what the fuck you want to. You don't have to worry about cussing or anything. Just do it if that's what you have to do. And if you don't want to, hopefully it doesn't offend you. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
All right, so, Crystal, we're going to start with you because I think you said you had to leave early. So let's get your fine self going. I did see your pictures, though. You know, I looked at y'all, so I know what we're dealing with here. So go ahead.
Oh, I'm introducing myself.
Yeah.
Hello, my name is Crystal Alexis. I, pardon?
Go ahead, babe.
Oh, I'm just going to say, hey, my name is Crystal Alexis. I am the author of Social Deception 1 and 2. I'm currently signed to K. Ellis Publications, and I am the, or should I say I'm part owner of the Irish Company Swag Productions. And thank you all for having me.
Okay. Yara?
I am Yara Kalima, owner of Swag Productions, Strong Women Achieving Greatness Productions. I am the host of Swag Radio and also the co-host with Ms. Crystal Alexis of Gossip Village Radio. I am currently signed to Dove Life Publications, where I have penned my first novella with that company called Gossip Village, where the show comes from. I am also the author of Brick City Chick, Dungeon Master Sense of Secret, Too Much to Chew, 1 and 2. And right now, Ms. Crystal Alexis and I am getting ready to put out our book, our anthology, Please Don't Kill Me, an anthology against domestic violence. I am from Newark, New Jersey. And that's that.
And both of y'all have these voices that sound like... I don't know how to describe it. How would you describe it, DB?
They're very, I don't know, they sound young. You have young voices.
But I bet they're
young. I'm actually the youngest of the duo, Ms. Yara K. I'm the youngest. She's older than me. But
okay. We
make it do what it is, best friends for life, right, Chris?
Right.
Okay, so let me ask you guys, since you're here, ladies, let me ask you, you talk on domestic violence and all that stuff, so are the books that you have written, are they nonfiction, or are they fiction novels, but just speaking into the subject of that, or they have nothing to do with that, or kind of give us an explanation of or a synopsis without telling the story, what is going on with that?
Crystal? Okay. I'll speak. Please Don't Kill Me, an anthology against domestic violence. All of these stories, 12 stories in total, are about domestic violence in one way or another, whether it be physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, or what have you. And that's just for that anthology. And we decided to do this project because so many men and women are affected by domestic violence throughout the year, and we wanted to do something to give back. And so our idea was to do this anthology and donate all of the proceeds to charities across the world. All of us are, you know, from different areas, all of the authors in the anthology, so we decided to donate all of the proceeds from the anthology to charities for domestic violence.
Crystal, that is your voice, baby.
No, that's the Yara K.
That's
Yara's voice.
But I have...
Yeah, is that how you actually talk all the time?
Yes.
Really? Interesting.
Tell him, you don't
Crystal,
know that
like, every time somebody comes on our show, they're like, you have, like, the craziest voice. Like, every time that we have new listeners on our show, GV, they inbox me and say, oh, my God, her voice.
Right. So let me ask you, now, when y'all do your show, because you're not new to the radio game, as I hear, when you do your show, do you always just interview people that on that subject, or do you talk on all types of subject matter?
All different subject matter.
So you talk about sexual this and relationships and all of that as well?
Oh, he must have heard our show last week, because we was talking about Menage a Trois over there last week on GV. That's how we did that.
Wow, her voices. Her voices got me. Okay, all right, well, yeah. I can imagine you talking about Menage a Trois and talking in that language of that sound of voice you have. It probably would just probably have some people probably getting heated while listening to the show, sure.
Wow.
You don't think so? Both of y'all have voices like that. You don't think that was the case?
Absolutely. You know, I gained a couple of readers. People was like, yeah, you talk like that. I need to go buy your book.
Exactly. That's the point that I'm trying to make here. So if anybody's out there listening and they want to get involved, the number is 917-889-8206. This is Word Sexy Radio, Grown Folks Radio, and we have these beautiful young ladies with these sexy voices on the line. You might want to call in. Or if you want to get on the chat room, you can get in there and ask your questions as well. All right, so here we go. Now, you have written these books and you have done – how long have you been doing your radio show?
Swag Radio has been in existence for about 6 or 7 months. I'm quite new author because I just started out about last year, about May. So Swag Radio has been in existence for about 6 months. And GV, we just started Gossip Village about 2 or 3 months ago because the book only came out in about April and it's only August, September. So, you know, it just started out fairly new.
It's so
funny.
Wow, we have so, a lot of
Do you interview lots of people, or have? I mean, I haven't had an interview or invitation, but do you guys do interviews of authors and of all
on
types
Swag
of
Radio,
genres?
On Swag Radio, that's what I do. I do interviews only on authors. On GV, it's open forum. Anybody could call in, and we just talk about whatever, like whatever we choose the topics to be, you know, for that week or whatever, that's what we talk about. And we freestyle it. It is what it is. Like, it comes on late, so we could talk raunchy and nasty if that's what we want to do. But
well, you
could
do that on Word Sexy Radio right now, too. We talk shit and all that, so you can bring some of that right now. We don't have to wait. We don't have to wait till it's 3 a.m. We can do that shit right now. But anyway, so how raunchy do you get? DV, you got the 5 questions. How raunchy do you get?
That's a weird question. I mean, it depends on, you know, how the conversation gets heated, because sometimes, you know, as you can tell, more outspoken than Crystal, so I start to talk and then a whole bunch of stuff come out. I remember one show we was talking about something, and I was like, I think prostitution should be legal. Ooh, that just sparked the whole conversation.
Well, let's talk about that. What makes you think that prostitution should be legal? Because I don't see why it's illegal.
Listen,
just like I don't understand why weed has been illegal all these years. But anyway, let's talk about that since you brought that up. Why do you feel that
because,
it should
listen,
be?
You giving your pussy up for free, right? Why not get paid and you get your taxes paid? You going to get a shit up anyway. I mean, I'm just saying, though, we wouldn't be in debt if the government taxed coochie. Everybody giving up coochie. What?
Okay, so if it's a regular job, if prostitution is legal, it's a regular job, do you feel that you have to pay taxes on it or just like a regular job and get Social Security for 40
years? Look, cracking your pussy
is
a job. Getting up day and taking care of yourself, making sure you're healthy. You got to go through all of this to be a prostitute. Well, I'm sure some prostitutes don't go through all that, but if you want to be a precautionary prostitute, yeah, that's what happens. You got to make sure yourself taken care of. You got to do all this shit. Why not get paid for it and not be able to, you know, be locked up for giving away your coochie that you got?
What should the going price start
commodity.
Out What should the going price start out across the board?
I say a thousand or better, because I ain't laying down unless you're giving up some stacks.
So you say you got to have $1,000for... Okay, now you
better.
Know what my next question is going to be. Why would your pussy be worth $1,000? Tell us why.
I mean, it could be worth more than that, but I'm saying the average nigga ain't, you know. Come on, let's be real. A lot of us from the hood, I'm from Newark, I don't know a lot of niggas that, you know, that's just willing to give up $1,000 every time they squat.
That's what I'm saying.
So
let's get reasonable.
Reasonable?
I want to be reasonable.
I can't go lower than that, though. Hold the fucking phone. I can't go lower
$1,000 for a piece of ass.
I mean, it depends. Okay, so there's different types of sex. You could say if you having oral sex, I could let that go for like $200, $100.
If a man wants to eat your pussy, he's got to pay you at least $200.
Yes. Shit, I need my cell phone bill paid. I got to get my feet done. I got to look cute for this nigga when he comes because I can't be no raggedy.
But let me ask you.
So shit, that costs money.
I understand, but listen. Watch tax one guy to pay the cell phone bill. You're going to be fucking all day. So why do you need to get $200 from one motherfucker?
No.
Why you can't
I
get $75
money,
from him
bitch,
and then the next nigga that finish you off? Because you're going to get some nuts in there. Do they get a discount when they make you come or what? What's up?
No. Crystal, what type of perfume you like?
You know what?
What type of perfume you like, Crystal? Come on. Yes, girl. She like product perfume. How much
is Crystal the one that was laying down on her back with her legs up on her
picture? How much is Crystal?
Real.
Crystal, how much it costs?
Crystal's
Crystal?
The one who can't put a price tag on her kitty cat.
No price tag on the cat. Okay.
$200 for hair.
The problem is $150.
Okay. DB got a question. DB got a question. Go ahead, DB.
But let's be realistic. The law averages say that no man anywhere, unless he filthy stinking rich, is gonna pay $1,000 to get laid. That's just real. You know,
that's what you're saying.
Capitalism.
But I'm saying like,
but $200.
If this was a legal thing.
No, nah, man. Even if it's legal, the price will come down because there'd be too many people flooding the market.
True.
Very true.
It'd be too many coochies.
Yeah,
would be low grade coochies.
It'd be like a coochie giveaway.
Some coochies would be high coochie giveaway. You know, so it'll fluctuate. You can't, like she said, you can't put a price on the coochie. I guess we all come from something.
That's what you think.
It ain't like even if it wasn't legal, we all come for something. Like we all, when you lay down with somebody, you expect to get something out the deal. He got to pay the bills. He got to do this. He got to do that. He got to take out the damn trash. You got to get something out the deal. You can't just be laying down just to be laying down. That's some bullshit.
And we understand. Look, we understand that. Let me tell you what I know.
Like
let me tell you from my experience what we know. Okay, from the game that I've been in and in the strip game where the strippers are actually making more outside of the club than they are in the pole, my thing is this. You got to be smart about it. You can't just try, like I said, tax one guy to get everything. If you do it right and tax him well, he's going to come back. And if the pussy's worth it, he's definitely going to pay. So why tax his ass for $1,000 every time? And this is a white boy that's going to pay that. Why would you tax that guy like that when you know he's going to come back? If he's paying $200 and he likes the pussy, he's going to come back and pay $200 again for it. He's not going to keep going with, I got to get this motherfucker $1,000 just for one nut. Come on. Now,
I mean, it won't be one
right,
nut. If he's paying $1,000, you got to squeeze that pussy a couple of times to get the $1,000.
Well,
I ain't saying just waiting for one nut. That's some dumb shit. You got
to
make him want
to
come back and pay you $1,000 again. You got
to
have gift for the gag.
You was making it sound like that was it, though. I didn't know. I had to make sure. But anyway, my thing is you know, you don't want to tax. You want to get you two or three niggas, or men, don't have to be niggas or whoever, that will pay that price. Because, you know, white boys, I know from what I've seen, you can get them to pay you and don't even fuck. You know, ain't no brother going to do that. But you can get them to pay you and don't fuck.
Well, that's what you do.
You get
a old ass white sugar daddy.
Get you a couple of motherfuckers that
do
that shit. Right. And then you can save your pussy for the motherfucker that you really want to give it to.
I agree.
You know? So that's the thing. You just got to know how to play the game. But if you are going to fuck,
say,
get some pleasure
say,
out of it
Crystal?
For a couple of hundred. You know, I mean,
what
you know,
got
to be reasonable.
Crystal, what you say? What you think?
I wouldn't put a price tag on my body.
Crystal,
that's
your shit
true.
Must be good, huh? Crystal, your shit must be good,
like
huh? You don't want
to
put a price tag on her.
I would like to believe so. But
I'm sure you
I got some good
coochie
too.
Everybody's not worthy of
ain't no man nowhere gonna complain. He happy to get it. Even the worst pussy ever, he be like, I love it. I need it again.
Okay,
yeah,
so when y'all say
pussy.
Make prostitution legal, now you know that's not just women. There are going to be male prostitutes. What should they charge
sure.
women for a pussy? You know, to get this dick, what
these
they gonna charge?
Dudes.
Oh, yeah. It could be two guys.
See, it got to be
some
moms.
It's going to be some gay prostitution. It's going to be lesbian prostitution. I mean, let's just be real about it. If it's going to be legal, then you're going to have all types of things going on.
But I say this. This is what I say. It got to have the same price across the board. Like, you can't be like, if you got a little average dick, like all the dicks that's 3 inches, they all the same price. All the dicks that's 4 inches, they all the same price. All the dicks that's bigger, they all the same price. Shit.
So you're saying that since it's going to be legal, it needs to be regulated by the state on the size of your
yes.
dick.
Yeah.
How much
you know
can charge.
They'd be like, sorry, this is the most you can charge, dude.
Okay, dude, your dick is 4 inches, so you can't charge no more than that.
You might as well.
The average woman's pussy is only 7 inches in length anyway. Average woman taking a dick, they don't want nothing over 7 or 8 inches anyway because you can't get all that shit in. So, I mean, so how do we charge it? We charge it like, okay, if he's a 9-incher, then he's tearing
this
bitches up.
Special,
so we gotta,
this is the VIP dingling.
But see, if he's 9 inches, he's also at a disadvantage. Because, like, at the end of the day, not everybody wants that. It becomes, you know,
that's what I was just saying. That's exactly what I was just saying. Not all women want the big-ass motherfucking dick. They want one that they can feel and fill them up. But they don't want some shit that's hanging out. Damn, this motherfucker, he's still got 4 inches still out. He ain't all the way in. You know,
if that's
he'll tell you quick, I ain't fucking that dude.
If he got a big dick, she don't want all the dick. He better be able to eat coochie. If he got a little dick, she don't want that
so
little
what,
dick.
But he
better
for
eat coochie.
If he paying for it, he got to better do nothing. At the end of the day, if I'm paying for this shit, all right, $1,000. I'm just talking to a grip. Oh, my God, $1,000. I don't even pay $1,000 for a TV, all right? But man, like, for real, like, you can't sit up there and charge a grand and be like, okay, now I got these conditions that you got to meet. Fuck that. All right, I'm paying $1,000.
I mean, I think it goes both ways. If I came looking for you and you had a price, I would be like, okay, well, I could negotiate with that if you do X, Y, and Z. Like, I like my butthole. If you can't lick my butthole, then we can't mm-hmm. do it. It is what it is.
Oh,
and so if that's
not included
in my $1,000,
ears, nose, whatever the fuck I can get for $1,000. I'm not going to just fuck one a pussy and that's
see,
it.
That's what I mean.
I'm going to get it all.
You
got to
be
everything
willing
that
to
has... Exactly. If you're going to charge me $1,000, I should be able to stick wherever the fuck I want. And lick wherever the fuck I want.
That is funny.
Well, and how long is $1,000 going to last? How much
yeah.
time do I have with you?
A night.
You see what I'm saying? It's a night. Okay, that's cool. A night,
$1,000
for one night.
I might be a little bit nice.
Damn, $500 a night. See, now you're talking.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I mean,
maybe. If I
now
like
you're talking
you.
Something that makes sense.
If you made me feel
you don't
good
wanna
the first
overtax.
Night, I might let
oh,
you
oh, the nigga
back
can't
the
fuck, he can't
night.
Come back. Oh, damn.
Nah, he can't come back. No refunds either.
Stevie, now she's bringing in her own feelings. See what I'm saying?
Now
what
your fucking
to
ego is involved because I done crushed
but,
you.
Yeah.
Nigga, you it can't fuck. You got to go.
But see, let's not pretend that there's women out there that can't fuck. It's a lot of them. I can't tell you how many
I ain't
women
met near one
to.
Yet. When I meet
I
one,
it's a lot of women that
I'll
can't fuck.
You know.
Trust me.
Man,
there's
yeah.
a lot of women that cannot fuck. Trust me.
Would they just do lay there?
No, it's just... No, it's not even that.
It ain't even that. Sometimes
it
is
a delusion.
Because how could the pussy... Like, I don't understand that. She must have just laid there if it wasn't good. Shit.
Nah, yeah.
Not
but
all pussy is good, baby.
Nah. Yeah, it,
not
it,
all
it,
pussy
but,
is
yeah,
good.
Particular.
Trust me.
I am very particular.
Crystal.
As well.
I'm here.
Not all
talk,
pussy
girl,
is good.
Shit,
not all pussy
throat
is good.
Is getting dry.
Just like all dick ain't good. You know, y'all...
Oh my.
You know, women, I ain't going to say y'all, but I'm going to say women in general. They charge a dude on the size of his dick like he asked, okay, I want a 3-inch dick. Just give me a 3-inch dick. I don't want a 10-inch dick. Like it's his fault. You know, and he gets dogged down for that shit.
Sometimes you can't help the way God made you.
That's absolutely correct. Same thing with a pussy. All pussies aren't good.
Some pussies loose. I mean, I've heard that. Shit, some pussies make farting noise. Niggas don't like that shit.
Queef. Shit, I don't mind. Shit, they call queefing.
Some pussy squirts and some don't.
Man,
you got some people that don't want to be with a woman that don't squirt.
Hey, they can sing for
like did you hear what I said? Some people don't want to be with women if they don't squirt. Not all women
wow.
can squirt.
Yeah, I think that's more like peeing on you.
So you know, it's just whatever you determine what you like. You know what I'm saying? If you were squirter, then you get more money. You know, it just depends. You know, I'm just saying. Some people may not want to be squirted on. They may not want to see that. You know, it's just up, whatever.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't be wanting to get nutted on. I be like, look, brother, you better go pee in that cup over there because you ain't squirting that shit on me. Like, sometimes you feel like that. Sometimes you be like, give it to me nasty. Like, you know, depends on the mood, you know.
Right.
$1,000 say the mood is all the time. That's
that means she should have come all over her face and everything, right?
But like, you know, if some woman is paying me $1,000, she's like, all right, I want to shit on your chest. What choice do I have? I'm like, damn.
You let her shit or don't get the money, right?
Now I got to clean up. You know what I'm saying? Nah, man.
Let her shit on your chest or don't get the money. I understand.
But that's what I'm saying.
I wrote that in one of my books.
You can't make choices and demands.
A very long time ago. When I was a
little. You said you wrote somebody shitting on somebody's chest in your book?
Well, it wasn't on his chest. It was more like on his dick, but same illusion, you know. And that was a long time ago, though. I was an amateur then, but I was writing raunchy stuff when I was like 11. Ooh.
11?
Taking me back. Yeah, I was like in eighth grade when I wrote my first book. Probably younger
than
that.
You was in eighth grade?
Maybe.
What was you writing about?
No.
Nursery rhymes, niggas fucking on the playground and shit. What was you writing about?
When I was in sixth grade, me and this girl wrote a book. It was about a girl getting raped or whatever. But it was still raunchy. I was in sixth grade. Then by the time I got to, like, eighth grade, I think I wrote Miss Princess when I was, like, in eighth grade. So, yeah. And that's
so how
the book when she shitted on his
baby.
I'm 22.
Oh, okay. You're
22, right?
Okay.
See, now I understand the cavalier attitude about, you know, sex. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
He was already there.
Yeah, it's always been there, I guess.
And Miss Crystal is not going to say anything, right? Because
she's like, I ain't talking about this. Y'all
talk.
Nasty.
She didn't come on this interview for this. And I didn't know we were going to be talking
about books.
Way.
And y'all talking about getting shitted on your chest. That's nasty.
So, Crystal, would you like us to change the subject? Because I know you got to go. So what would you like to speak on? Would you like to tell us about your book and how you came about in writing? How did you start writing? And, you know, just give us a kind of background. What got you interested in writing the genre you write in?
You know, well, my first book, Social Deception 1 and 2, is actually about the motorcycle thing. It's about a young lady who is the motorcycle, like the motorcycle club.
Okay.
We
so just her experiences in being in... Being the lady of one of the guys or just in a motorcycle club of her own or what?
Like, I have experience being in a motorcycle club.
You have a what?
We
have
a lot of once you,
You're very soft-spoken.
She is. I still didn't see what she said. I didn't hear what she said. She said she has what?
Oh,
in a motorcycle club?
I have experience. In the motorcycle club, and because I had
so were you a member, or were you one of the ladies of a man that was in the club?
I was the wife of a man that was in the club.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so and you decided to write about that because
I did because I had never
read
anything like that because I know
and you're right. So did you write about Black Bike Week and all that stuff and those kind of things? In your book?
I wrote about some of the things that go on, you know, in the clubhouse. You might have your man over here. He might have his wife over there. He might have his hoe over there. He might have his heel right here. He might have his bitch right there. That kind of stuff.
Okay, so he was doing a lot of, they was doing a little, like swinging, switching up. You know, everybody knew that they had one person or more than one or that kind of thing?
No, not swinging, but, I mean, you know how it is, you probably don't, but in the bike club. A man may have.
You got a wife and you got a girlfriend and you got a. Yeah. Okay.
But exactly. Good stuff.
So wait, you're saying this is what happened to you, you know, before you wrote the book? I mean, you were actually in a marriage with a biker.
Correct. But hold on. Don't get it twisted now. This didn't happen to me.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
No, I'm not saying this just happened to me. Oh, no. This is not my wife's story. This is just something that I
decided to write about because I thought it would be a good read. Oh, no, I never went through
well,
that.
Well, okay, well, damn, okay. She makes sure she gets to the point, and that's it, huh?
Oh, yeah. No, it ain't my life story.
No, we understand, sweetheart. We got you. Okay, so that's all we're going to get, though, is you wrote about the bike club, and that's it. We don't get nothing else.
That's it, because I have to go motherhood calls, but I am going to keep listening, though.
I love you, Crystal.
You're going to leave?
I got
all right. Assalamu alaikum.
Motherhood calls. Wa alaikum assalam.
She's gone.
I love you.
Yeah, thank you. I love you, too.
Bye-bye.
Assalamu alaikum.
That's my heart right there. I love her. You know, you see what Facebook does. Like, I met her through my radio show, Swag, and then we found out we were sisters in Islam, and this whole relationship sparked. I love her to death. I give her the clothes off my back. That's my girl. For real, for real. And she's just so soft-spoken. I'm more talkative than her.
Right.
I know the feeling.
So is she getting off the phone, or is she...
Oh, she's still listening. She's just, you know, doing her motherly stuff.
Oh, okay, I got it.
Taking
okay.
care of her family.
Okay.
But she's still listening, though. She just doesn't want the chatter of a kiss to be heard on the show. But she's listening.
I hear you, cause especially with the shit we was talking. But anyway, so are your books erotic, or you just like to talk erotic shit?
I mean, I do, when I write sex scenes, they're always raunchy. I did put out an erotic...
Well, give me an example of what you mean by raunchy, because a lot of people's raunchy is different than everybody else's. You know, somebody
I mean, like,
think,
he fucked me in the ass, he did this, he did that, he threw me on the table. Like, I write a little bit of raunchy stuff, but, you know, I did put out a collection of short eroticas, but I took it down off the market. That was a while back. But I think that, you know, I could write some pretty erotic stuff here and there. I don't, my story is more so focused on a lot of drama. But along with drama comes sex. Like, what's drama without sex?
That's true. So what genre do you say you write in? Is it urban fiction or what type of fiction?
It is,
urban
fiction, urban.
So is it dealing with drugs and stuff like that and drug dealers?
Not all, because I'm really not. Up on the drug lingo, so I try to stay away from it, even though it might be in my story somewhere, like little stuff that I know, but I won't write a whole book like, oh, he went and picked up 50 grams. I don't even know what the fuck that is, so I'm not going to say that in my book because I don't know what that is. So I'll write from the perspective of him doing, like, for example, my book Dungeon Master Sense and Secrets, the main character was a drug dealer, but he bought other women from other countries and brought them to America and put them in a sex exploitation ring. So it was more about that than about him being a drug dealer. Like, that was just something on the drug dealer was something on the side. The moneymaker was the coochie. That's why I said prostitution should be legal. My boy wouldn't have never went to hell. I mean, I'm just saying, though. You know?
Okay. I like that. That's cool. So
yeah. So I try to think outside of the box when I'm writing. I don't want my books to be all the same. Like, somebody left a review on Dungeon Master, and it was like, this was nothing like your first two books, Too Much to Chill. Like, this was totally different, and they respected, like, the fact that I went out way outside of the box for that story. So I like that. So I like to do that in all my stories.
That's what you want to do. You want to be different. So do you think that you will ever branch into other branches of other genres, or do you think this is an area that you just want to stay in and just keep it going?
No, I want to write. My next thing that I'm trying to write would be like a criminal something. I don't know. I'm thinking like mystery thriller type of book because like I want to do different stuff all the time. I'm always writing. I'm always thinking of stuff. So I always want to do something new, do something different. I see stuff on TV, and I'm like, yeah, I'm about to write about that. Like, for example, my story inside of Please Don't Kill Me, it's about a drag queen. I like drag queens, so I'm going to write about drag queens. So I want to write about different stuff.
Nothing wrong with that. I have a book out called Act for Congress that was about a transvestite that was actually working as a call girl to get the money to get his dick cut off so he'd get his pussy. So, I mean, you know, I know what you mean. He ended up, you know, getting murdered in the movie, but in the book, but it, was he really murdered or not is what you have to find out. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he was dealing with Congress.
Put the
title
in my inbox so I could find it.
I sure will.
So I could read it.
It's out there on Amazon.
I can't hear what you say in the title is, but I do want you to put in my...
Yeah, the name of the book is Acts of Congress, but I will send it to you. I'll send the link to you.
Absolutely, because I like supporting people who support me.
Right, right.
Absolutely.
So, DV, you got any questions, my brother?
Yeah, you know, earlier we touched on the book that you have coming out that deals with domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what type of experiences? I mean, you know, we went over, you know, physical abuse, mental abuse, you know, that type of thing. But what exactly, you know, prompted you guys to put together a book based on, you know, or stemming from domestic violence?
See, what happened was this happened very spontaneously. I was never expecting to do an anthology. I was never expecting it to be as big as it has become. But I had posted a little flash fiction piece on Facebook, and everybody, it was like 40 comments on it, like, when is the book coming? We want the book. And I'm like, there's no book. Like, I just wrote this because somebody said I can't write. And they're like, what? Somebody told you that you could write? Blah, 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 blah. You should finish it. And so me and Crystal got to talking, and then I posted up. I was like, if anybody want to be a part of an anthology, let me know. And then the outpour was tremendous. Like, I didn't expect it. And then, you know, after talking about it so much, I didn't even realize that I had been through my own situation. And I realized it when we had a conversation on Gossip Village about domestic violence. And then I was like, geez, I've suppressed this in my mind of being molested at a young age for so long that I didn't even realize that this was my own cause. And so, yeah, that's where it came from.
Interesting, interesting.
So, I mean, another quick question. When, you know, the whole Ray Rice situation played itself out, you know, what was your opinion, you know, on that whole ordeal?
Is this a sports guy? Look, I don't know nothing about current news, but enlighten me a little bit, and then I can say what my opinion was.
All right, well, long story short, football player, NFL.
Mm-hmm.
He gets into an altercation with his then girlfriend. He, the story ranges, but he basically uppercuts her in an elevator, and so she's knocked unconscious. So the hotel camera catches him dragging her out the, you know, out the elevator. I mean, she's completely out, like done.
Mm-hmm.
So he drags her out the elevator. He kind of lets her drop on the floor. Well, big firestorm came up about it, and so the NFL decided to suspend him for two games. But in the NFL, if you get caught taking performance-enhancing drugs, you get 4 games. But apparently, if you knock your woman out, you only get 2. So based on that scenario.
I've heard a little bit about the story. I'm not up on sports and stuff like that, so I really have no clue. But I think that there should be some type of repercussions for him. And it should be equivalent to taking performance enhancing drugs or more, actually, because your image, the image that you put out is for the people. So if you're putting out this image that you're a woman beater, that's terrible on the image of the NFL. And it's also terrible on your image as the player. There's many children who look up to you, and we need to start holding people more accountable. And it's like we, as a society, idolize people who are in authority or people who are entertainers, and they have to look at themselves as such. You're an entertainer, you're a role model, you are an image, so therefore you have to be held accountable for the actions that you take.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yes.
And you
so
say you're 22 years old, but you've been around for a little bit. You, although you're young, you have an interesting thought process on trying to, you know, tackle some things that are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, you didn't even realize that you were going through some of the things that you were discussing with people.
Mm-hmm.
So are you actually on, is your picture actually out there anywhere?
My picture?
Yeah, is it out there on your Facebook or anything? Because we don't know what you look like.
Oh, of course it is. To go find one. But
oh, okay.
I'm on Mutalima, anyway. So I guess that somebody caught that because he said, Assalamu alaikum to me.
Oh,
so
okay, that's, there you go. I see it. Yeah, I
so
see
maybe he was
okay.
searching
yeah,
somewhere
no,
for
I see
me.
It.
But
okay.
I think
so
that.
So how does that, okay, so let me ask you this before you go into that. You know, does any of this, you know, your writing or anything that you do, because I know you got real raunchy there earlier, all of that, does it have any effect on the religion that you're living or whatever and all that, does it?
Sometimes it does, only because, like, when I first started out writing, I had some, you know, friends tell me, oh, that's not a part of Islam and blah, 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 blah. But we have to realize that I'm not trying to kill nobody. I'm just trying to make some dollars to feed my daughter. That's it. And this is the talent that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blessed me with. So I don't know how to take away from it, and I don't know how to dilute it. So sometimes, you know, being in the public eye gets me in trouble a little bit. Sometimes my husband be going off the meat rack. But he understands that this is something that was chosen for me, just like he was. So this is something that was written for me, and I have to pursue it. And, you know, sometimes there are verse opinions, but it seems to me like the same people who ridicule me for writing urban fiction or writing sex fiction or whatever you want to call it, or talking how I talk or whatever may be the case, are the same people that support Tyler Perry. So it's just like, what the hell are you talking about? You supporting a dude in a dress, but you telling me that I can't write about fake-ass people? Like, come on. So that happens sometimes, you
I'm
know.
I'm glad you said it the way you did. Thanks a lot for saying it like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, like sometimes sometimes it happens that people want to be discouraging or whatever. But those are the same people who husbands have 4 and 5 wives and don't take care of none of them. Those are the same people who had, like, even though they cover up, they covering up their own insecurities. So it's like, it is what it is. I'm a Muslim. I pray to my Lord and I repent to my Lord and I love my Lord. But this is something that Allah Swaila, something Allah Swaila blessed me with. And I don't know how to suppress it. And I won't suppress it.
Well,
I've been writing since
I
was like
Well, you know, I was just asking because I know people try to judge. They judge any religion you're in and doing this. But my thing is,
they judge you anyway.
Didn't God create sex? I mean, just because he created it doesn't mean that you can't talk about it or whatever. I mean, I'm tired of these preachers being in your bedroom and all this stuff telling you what you can and can't do. You can't eat this, you can't do that. But, you know, but then again, they looking at you trying to get between your legs. And, you know, I'm just saying, I'm just tired of all
this.
Yeah,
you know, sometimes people mix religion with their personal, you know, personas. But it is.
Yeah, they
be
getting mad because a woman's
judge me
like,
anyway. If I was sitting over here with no husband and my baby was walking around nappy-headed and blah, 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 you going to talk about me. They talk about Beyonce. They talk about whoever. So they don't even care. So they going to talk anyway. That's what they're going to do. And when you talk about me, make sure you mention the titles of my books. That's Brick City Chick, Gossip Village, Dungeon Master, Sins and Secrets, Please Don't Kill Me. Yeah, make sure you say all of that so that whoever you talking to about me to will go out and buy my books because you done talked about them. Thank you.
Right. Yeah, because it's amazing because, like I said, they want to judge you. They want to say
people
all these things.
Do that anyway.
And then,
you know,
they, like you said, they doing all this stuff. And you're right. You know, supporting Tyler Perry and his
I mean, I like Tyler
jewelry.
Too. Don't get me wrong.
No, don't
but
get
I'm
me
just
wrong.
Saying, don't,
you know, I'm
don't
saying,
judge me. I'm trying to get with
right.
Tyler, actually, because I want to write a show. But that's neither here nor there. But I think that, you know, don't try and be judgmental when, especially if it's on social media, because I'm going
to
hit you with this, like, no, I don't need him because y'all ever got the pen, but I'm going to tell you like this. Most times in my religion, people are judgmental on social media. If you want to be judgmental on social media, I could come at you and say, you ain't even supposed to have a cell phone since you want to say that this is haram. Because the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam ain't had no cell phone. So I'm just saying, though. So if you're going to say, oh, you can't do this, you can't do that, well, we ain't supposed to take pictures. We ain't supposed to be communicating with people on the Internet. So it's a lot of stuff that we ain't supposed to do. We supposed to walk behind our husbands when we walk outside. We in America. Get your life. I'm American all day, and I tell people that all the time.
Well, you
I'm
know,
American.
My thing
I vote.
Is... Yeah, it's
I watch television.
You know,
television.
I understand that Mr. Perry is famous and all that, and I'm not taking nothing from him for him going
mm-hmm.
through the struggle he had to get to do that, and wearing
mm-hmm.
a dress got him there or whatever. But, you know, I mean, I just get tired of all, not just him, but all the stuff that's out there that's got black to it that has to be buffoonery. You know, I'm just tired of buffoonery and everything. It's always, it seems like all the movies we got has got to be funny and stupid and ghetto. You know, I'm just, you know, we can't do anything smart. We can't do anything scientific. We can't do it. I mean, why not?
I think it's because people don't know their history. People don't know where they come from. People don't know that the same electricity that they use was made by a black person. They don't know. And because the history about African-Americans is about as big as a thing of deodorant, inside the textbook, so you don't even know nothing about yourself. So therefore, you can't say that I'm powerful because you don't know that you're powerful. And so
that
is what.
But you gotta go look for it. It's a shame you gotta do it, but you gotta look for it. They're gonna make sure, like they always say, that if you want to keep something from a black man, put it in a book. So,
mm-hmm.
but the books that we're writing and putting out there is always about the shit we're doing anyway already. The urban fiction, the genre I write in. Erotica and all that. Is that really helping? You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, it just...
I think it's the way that you do it. And I think that a lot now, especially, readers are getting tired of reading the same old story over and over and over. Why can't the woman have a job? Like, why can't she be, like, a regular person? Why can't she be a teacher? Why can't the man be have a regular job? Why can't he flip fucking burgers? Like, we have to write the stories with him being a drug dealer. Like, that's all that is there is to life. Is dudes being drug dealers? Yeah, it's like, okay, I see this shit on my front porch. I don't want to read a damn book about it. Just saying.
Right. I was looking in the chat room. I see that they were talking about Flip Wilson, who was like the king or queen, if you want to call it, of drag as far as on TV and bringing it out. Yeah, I agree with you. You know, he did the same thing. And a lot of these comedians, if you look at them, they all feel like they got to have a female character in their thing of characters, I guess. You know, most of them do, and they have some type of woman, you know, that dress up like that they do. So, I mean, I don't know. You know, I mean, let's look
I'm
at
gonna,
it.
I'm not even going to say what I think that is, because they might
you know, I really,
me,
to me,
I
think it's
I think
just they really want
to
be, you know.
Like, I know
I think that's some type of, you know, Illuminati.
They really show what they really are. But anyway, you know, like you said, Flip Wilson was like the king of that. He was on national television, a black man that had their own variety show and was dressed like a woman. And it was buffoonery then, and it still is. You know, I said the same thing then. When I was younger then. But, yeah, I mean,
mm-hmm.
I didn't understand why you got to be dressed like a woman and all this stuff. But
mm-hmm.
anyway, everybody saw that work, so
but
now
you know,
they got the character.
But
you
know, you
know you got Mark Lawrence got his character. You know, Eddie Murphy did it the best with his
mm-hmm.
women that he was acting like. And, you know, all these people, to me,
but
I'm not saying all of them,
though.
Dude. Some of the people, yeah, he is. But, you know, it's like, it's just a lot of mess out there. You know what I'm saying? But if that's
mm-hmm.
what's getting the money, fine. But because people are supporting it. So, I mean, they're not going against it. So, I don't
mm-hmm.
know. I'm just not, I don't know. I just think that we need to take a look at ourselves and get our history, like you said, and just kind of look. It don't have to be a slave story. But we just need to understand, like you said, we invented a lot of things that we're using right now, and people don't realize it. Like the traffic light was invented by a black man. You know,
I was getting ready to say that.
Nobody want to hear it, but, yeah, Garrett Morgan, nobody wants to talk about stuff like that. All they want to talk about is, you know, Friday at the Knicks, and how many motherfuckers is twerking, and all this stuff. You know, I'm just, I don't know. Anyway, whatever.
I agree. You know.
So I know DV.
Sometimes we have to just look outside of the box. We have to look outside of, you know, what you know, what we see face forward. Like, a lot of times when people ask me, you know, stuff about myself, I always say, like, right now I'm in school and I'm going to be a social worker. And I wanted to do so because there's so many things plaguing the young black mind. And it's like, some in sociology we learn that, you know, sometimes people only do what they know. So it's not ironic that there are girls who live in minority areas who don't know how to cook because, like, they only could eat ramen noodles because their mother got to go to work and she can't, you know, teach them. So these are things that affect us, like a domino effect, and we have to be aware of our surroundings, aware of what's going on around us. Like, I live in Newark.
So that's why women...
21 schools got
closed down. Because they only know how to make noodles, ramen noodles.
Yeah.
You know,
that shit is cheap. You could get four packs of noodles for a dollar.
I know. That's true to a point. You're right, because the parent is not taking out the time to show them how
and
to
because
do
of the money.
You're right.
And because of the money, especially in an urban area. You have to look at the socioeconomic demographic because, look, right, I live in Newark, right, and I live in a high-rise apartment building. Across the street from my house, there's a McDonald's and there's a Wendy's and a Checkers, all in the same, it's like one circle, a Wendy's, a Checkers, a McDonald's, and then up the block is a KFC, a IHOP, and a Pathmark, right?
Yeah.
They're always crowded. Why? Because people are always on the go. Like, they can't stay in one place to cook a home-cooked meal. Or they don't have the money. It's cheaper to go to the corner store and buy four packs of ramen noodles for $1.25 than to buy your whole family a meal of fresh corn and, you know, halal meat and this and that. You can't do that all the time because you got to scrape together your pennies, and then that affects your kids because now they don't know how to cook for themselves because they only know how to cook ramen noodles because you could afford that. So, and then that affects how they learn. This is a domino effect, and I don't know if it was designed, but I like to think so.
Oh, yeah, it was part of the mix. It's part of the mix, yeah.
There's no bank, you know, when you think about it, there are very few banks and even fewer supermarkets in our neighborhoods, and that's done by design. Simply, you know, the simple answer would be this, you know, whenever you keep people from knowing their history, whenever you keep them repressed, whenever you keep them oppressed, they don't see nothing better and they don't know no better, nothing
Absolutely.
Better. So they don't act on anything better.
I agree.
But when you show people that look like them succeed, which is why you very rarely hear about anybody outside of entertainment that is black, because they want you to keep in your mind that unless you play sports or unless you rapping, that you don't amount to shit. And that's essentially what they're telling you.
And that's why on my radio show, Swag Radio, we celebrate black-owned businesses, women, female-owned businesses, and at the end of the month, I give a prize to one of my listeners from a female-owned business because I think that if we empower one another, because I'm a businesswoman, I'm an entrepreneur in my own right, so why not support another entrepreneur who's like me, like who looks like me, who identifies with me, you know, than to support Staples or Claire's or something like that. If I know somebody that makes jewelry, why not say, okay, well, I'm going to give my readers a certificate to buy something with this person who makes jewelry that live across the street from me, rather than tell her to go to Claire's with a Claire's gift certificate. That's dumb as hell when that person lived next door to me. So if we supported one another more often, we wouldn't have this issue of there being no money in our communities because we'd be able to build our own businesses. And, you know, that's why I love being a Muslim, because I know hundreds of women who make old Muslim overgarments. I don't have to buy from Habibis if I don't want to.
It's like, you know what the thing is? It happens. Like, I think about this whole, you know, Mike Brown situation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we all know that the cop who hasn't actually been charged has made more money, you know, than Mike Brown's family for the funeral.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? And when you think about that, it puts the context of America in that nutshell. You know, he hasn't been charged. He has a $400,000 to basically run away with. He has not been charged with anything. and they still contributed money. They had to stop people from contributing money. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Whereas you have a boy who was unarmed, who was shot to death, and they almost
no
made
consequences.
Twice the money that they made. You know what I'm saying? And at the end of the day, I was reading the article today. During the summer, 16 black people have died at the hands of the police. Not a single case in any one of those. So essentially what they're saying is we're good for target practice, but there is no oppressor anywhere that is going to teach you anything about your history. Because once you know what your history entails, once you know what you're capable of accomplishing, you're no longer oppressed.
Mm-hmm. And I agree. I agree 100%. And I think that one thing that we have to understand is that history will repeat itself. So this is like the riot of 67. This is like, you know, the Watts Mike riot. This is the same thing happening again. And, you know, we have to come to this conclusion that if we learn to educate ourselves and educate our family, it will be harder for them to target us. And because we fall so sullen and we come to being violent and fighting back with the same force that they fighting us with, if we just, you know, band together more often and took back our streets, we wouldn't have this much of an issue. I'm not saying that violence will be erased completely, because I don't think that that's possible. I don't even think that racism will be erased completely, because this is something that we were taught. Race doesn't really exist. You're more like somebody who lives across the world from you than your next door neighbor. You probably have more genetic connections to a person who lives across the world from you than your next door neighbor. So it's like there's no genetic basis or scientific basis on race. There's no genetic code that says, oh, this person is black.
Right.
This is something that was made up and designed to create hatred and discrimination and separation from one another. So,
well, you know, all of it goes back to the Lynch letter, you know, that, you know, that's out there, that was very powerful. A lot of people, you know, may not even know what that is, but if you was to look up the Willie Lynch letter, you know, he wrote this letter saying how to combat us by keeping us against each other.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean,
black on black,
you know,
genocide. It happens every day. We killing
but, you know,
each other.
It happens all the time with just light skin, dark skin, or whatever. And that's what he was talking about. You know, using
Absolutely.
All those things. And I understand that there are still racism with the white man against us as well. And I understand that, you know, a lot of people think that, you know, it hasn't changed. But it hasn't. Let's just understand, just because we have a black president, as we have seen and have known.
It will never change.
It has never changed, and it was even worse. Yeah, he's in the seat, but, you know, we still ain't going to let him do what we don't want him to do, or whatever we want him to do, we'll let him do, or whatever. And, you know, they try to sue him since he's been in office. They try to impeach him. They try to do all kinds of stuff to this guy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they even try to say he wasn't black enough to be black, to be the black president. He ain't black enough. So, I mean, you know, what the hell? You know, it just ain't going to never be what it is. It's just people just going to keep doing what they're going to do. And accept
and it's a lot of ignorance.
It's
a lot of ignorance, and like I said, if we don't band together, it's going to be like this forever.
We have the power. If we was to come together, we could stop a lot of this, but we won't come together because we're too busy with the crab mentality. You know, even in the literary game, I'll use our game for an example. You got people out there that's actually jealous and trying to tell people not to buy other person's books because they want you to buy theirs. Why?
Mm-hmm.
When they can read yours, and then after they read yours, you can read mine. You know, it's crazy. When there's more, you can't read but one book at a time anyway. Well, maybe you can read two. But the thing is, you know, why not? Why do you have to do that? I just don't understand.
Because
why
there's a belief that you can't succeed unless somebody else fails. And a lot of people carry this, especially us.
And people don't want to help each other. Like, they don't want to help each other. They don't want to give each other help. Like, this one person said to me, well, how do you, because, you know, she new to the game. She's like, well, how do I know that you won't steal my book? I said, I've been writing for a long time. I don't have no reason to steal from nobody. I'm trying to help you. If anything, that's what I'm going to do. And I'm one of the warmest people ever. If you come to me and say, I need a shirt, I'm going to give you the one I got on my back, because that's just how I was built. Like, but some people so used to people going against them that they don't even want to accept when you're trying to help them.
Because it's usually us. We are our own biggest obstacle. You know, mm-hmm. That's not all the time, but it happens when it happens enough. Now you're suspicious, because the truth is, we don't want to be suspicious of stuff. We don't want to be suspicious of our own people. We just don't. You know, we want to at least, you know, have faith. But then somebody comes along and says, you know, they're going to do you wrong. And when it happens, which is inevitable, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But the thing is, if somebody tell you the white dude is bad, you still giving another white dude a benefit of doubt. When somebody tell you a black dude is bad or a black woman is bad and they do you bad, you don't want to give them a benefit of doubt never again. All of a sudden, you just like, okay, well, they never going to get my business.
Well, you know, there's it's the Uncle Ruckus syndrome. You got some, they don't want to change. They like it the way it is. They think it's supposed to be like that. You know, yeah, the white man's supposed to be over us, and we're supposed to kiss his ass, we're supposed to do all the stuff he wants us to do, and yes, the boss, this and that, or whatever. You know, there's some people that feel that that's the way it should be, that we're designed that way. Because even though in the Constitution we were listed as chattel, we were listed as property, you know, they feel that we should still be that, instead of what the amendment made us, to be able to vote and be
men. It wasn't in the Constitution, but it was written in the law. And we were to be kind of three-fifths person.
Mm-hmm. But I think that we have to, sometimes I hear it so much, like the white man is doing this to me and this and that and the third. If you thought at any time that just because you was black you was going to be handed a silver spoon, that's bull. And it's like we have to realize that just because, it's just like in religion, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala said, just because you believe, don't think that you won't be tested. So it's the same thing. Just because you're one way, don't think that you won't be tested. You will be tested, and you will be called upon to answer at the end of the day. And if you just say, oh, I was sitting here and the devil made me do it, that's bull. So you have to be able to put on your big girl panties, your big boy drawers, and take responsibility for yourself. If you can't go find a job, make one.
One
if
thing
you
about
could
it,
be a drug dealer, you could own a business, and that's for real.
Well, my thing is this, and I don't want to get too into religion because I don't want to do that, but, you know, the devil gets all these props for so many things that he didn't even do.
Mm-hmm.
He ain't even involved in it, but he's going to take the credit because you're giving it to him.
Mm-hmm.
Our biggest enemy is our own self, our flesh, our own self. And it's not sexual all the time. It's just whatever. We do it to ourselves. And we always, because of the free will that we have that the angels don't have, we have. And because of that reason, you know, it's like, okay, we want to blame him for it. And it's not even him. And I'm going
to
leave that.
You have to take responsibility for yourself. You have to make goals and things for yourself. Like I said, if you can't find a job, make one.
Right.
But
you know, that's one thing about me. Like, especially with men, like, I'm not dealing with no dude that don't take care of his responsibilities. I'm not dealing with no dude that don't take care of his kids. I'm not dealing with no dude that don't have no job. I don't care if you flip fucking burgers at Burger King. If that's what you got to do to feed your family, do that. But if you not doing absolutely nothing, you can't kick it with me.
Yeah, but remember, we all emulate what we see. The things that we grow up and that we see time and time again, that is who we become. It is very rare. The reason why it's so rare for somebody, you know, who's at the bottom tier, who's in the lowest socioeconomic condition to succeed is because they don't see success around them. So when
because they're marginalized.
Like, oh, well, look at here. But that's the thing. The thing is
but
no
you know,
one
DB,
sees that. So it's hard to make a plan for something you've never seen. If somebody
I
gives
agree
you a
with
bunch
that
of
to a point.
No. But wait,
I agree
listen.
With that to a
if
point.
I, gave you,
I agree with that
if
to
I
a
told
point.
You to build this, but if I told you to build me a house and I didn't give you any of the blueprints to do it, how on earth are you going to build that house? It constantly takes trial and error. And the thing is, without a support system, without somebody there telling you you can build this house, at some point you give up and you find an easier way to do something else. So the thing
is, we can put that on ourselves.
We can put this on ourselves, but at the end of the day, there's no support system to keep it in place.
Right. You know, I agree with you to a point, but I think sometimes we have to get out of our own self, like she said, and try to find a way by trying to find the knowledge to do it. A lot of times we don't want to do that because a lot of times we're lazy.
Because we're
lazy.
Like
you said, we don't know no other way, so we're like, well, I can't do it, so fuck it. I'm not going
to
do it.
But it goes back to the support system. But if
you know,
and it goes back to
what you said, what you see. If you ain't seeing no way how to get it, then you're not going to do it. So
But the thing is, if nobody's telling you stay in school, if nobody's telling you stay in school, you ain't going to stay in school. If nobody's supporting the fact that you want to stay in school, you're not going to stay in school. The thing is, everything is built upon something. And the reason why we have all of these people in all of the situation is because parents and their support system are constantly telling them that they can't do it. So if somebody tells you you're stupid every day of your life,
I'm on the fence with it because I do believe in what Mr. Bill Cosby teaches, that, you know, you can't let that cardboard box be your life forever. You got to step out of the cardboard box, you know. And he was one of those people who was dirt poor and made it from being dirt poor, and nobody had to tell him to get there. And I'm also one of those people. So it's like
Bill Cosby also credits his parents at every turn. He said his parents were constantly on his butt about him doing right.
And
so
we
forget those things.
Absolutely. And I think that there aren't too many parents who don't want better for their kids. There's a few that don't want better for their kids. A lot of parents, even if they got to work, you know, hard or close to nothing, they still try to encourage their kids to be better than what they were. And it's the decisions that their kids make that lead them on the road to destruction or to better. And I think that, you know, I was in a situation where one of somebody that was close to me put me in front of a mirror and said, "You see that girl staring back at you? She's never going to be anything, and look at where I am now." So that had an effect on me my whole life, because I was like, yo, she told me I'm never going to be nothing. When I graduated high school, I gave myself a big party and I invited her. When I wrote my first book, I sent her a copy with an autograph and I said, "Look, the girl you said never going to be nothing, look where she at right now." So it's like, sometimes there are going to be people who tell you, oh, you can't do it. Let that be your motivation to do whatever it is that you set your mind on, because the road to your success is limitless. You could be whatever you want to be. People tell me all the time, well, yeah, you just wrote a couple of books, but you're still in the hood. Yeah, I'm struggling right now, but 10 or 15 years from now, maybe not even that long on the road that I'm in on right now. It might not even take that long, but when I get there, I'm going to be so glad of all the obstacles that I went through to get there. You know, and you have to have that mindset of positivity and use whatever is against you as energy to do better than what you're doing at that present time. You have to use that as motivation. Make it your fuel.
But it's not, you know, what I'm saying is this. Everything is not based solely on us, because if we could will ourselves into a position, we would achieve it every time. There's a system set in place so that even when you don't, like when you don't achieve anything, there's constantly people pressing you down. When you do achieve things, there are people lifting you up. You may not see it. It may be in the form of a compliment. I knew you could do it. But the thing is, everybody who has ever succeeded has always had at least one person pushing them past what they themselves felt like they could do. And that's the thing we're forgetting. If you constantly hear people telling you, you will never amount to nothing, and you never hear anything to counter that. It's kind of like the whole Tyler Perry argument. We constantly get on him because he keeps making the same movies, but we can't expect him to be better if we don't say anything against it. We can't expect him to write a better movie if we keep telling him, yeah, this is the greatest thing I ever saw. This is the greatest movie ever.
True.
You know what I'm saying?
I mean, it goes both ways. It goes both ways.
Yep, that's correct. When you keep saying it's okay, you're right. Yep, you're right. So
if you settle into it, if you settle into is I'm never going to be anything, if you settle into that, that could conquer you,
then,
and that could
you
destroy
become.
You, and that could be who you become. I know people who, for example, are mothers but don't act like mothers. Because their parents didn't teach them how to love. Their parents didn't teach them how to do certain things, so they don't know. And it's like sometimes you say, oh, you can't blame that on her. You can't blame that on him because his father was not there. So now he can't be a parent because nobody taught him how to be a parent. But it's like at some point, you got to be like, what's in it? When you going to get it together? Why the man got to tell you how to do X, Y, and Z? Why you can't just, you know, read you on your phone 24/7 anyway? Why don't you use that damn data that you paying $20 for to fill out an application for a job? I mean, I'm just
saying. It's like this. I'm a single man. I meet, you won't believe how many women I meet that don't know how to cook. So what do I have to do? I have to take the initiative and show them what the hell to do. Because my mother raised me like this. She said, you will never depend on anybody for anything. She told me to cook, clean, wash, sew, the whole deal. So I know how to take care of myself. You know what I'm saying? But at the same time, I can't expect somebody to come to my house and automatically know how to cook if they don't know how to cook. You know, I'm not giving them an excuse because God knows what condition they find themselves in that they say, if you don't know how to cook, then you need to die. But I have to take that initiative. I have to show them how, I'm not going to say to be a woman because it's not a woman's responsibility to cook, but it is a parent's responsibility to feed their family. So I think that there are way too many people out there now spending their money on stuff either because of necessity or because they just don't feel like cooking. Then there are people cooking at the house. So, I mean,
people don't
have
sit down at the table and have dinner together.
They ain't dinner
anymore.
No more. You know what I'm saying?
They watch
and
TV.
Like,
they sit in front of the TV or they at the computer game or something like. They don't even sit down and play games. They don't even know what's going on in their kids' life, what they learned in school today.
I'm tell you like this. My son is 17 years old, all right? And every time his friends call my house, they're like, yo, can I speak to – that's not how you call my house. I hang up. I'm like, try again. I hang up. Because whenever you call my house, you will address me. Hello, Mr. So-and-so. How are you doing? May I speak to so-and-so? That is how you call my house. And I give them that one warning. Anytime they don't get called, anytime they don't call my house, they get hung up on. You know what I'm saying? Because But see, that's the thing. My parents always raised me, no matter whose house you call, when an adult picks up, you address them. You address them, you say hello, then you ask for whatever you call them for because guess what? It's the parents paying the bill. So until that kid is paying the bill, you address them as, you know, respectfully. So these kids nowadays, I don't know whether their parents not teaching them it or whether they just, you know, forget to have respect. But
half of the time the parents are kids themselves.
Well, right. But I like...
Listen,
but what I'm
saying is,
I'll
knock my
daughter
out. She better
kid.
Say, assalamu alaikum. She better say something. And she too.
But that's what I'm
saying. My daughter three. But she better be proper when she talks to people. Like, you mean, she be like, oh, yo, who you talking to? I will be her. I had time for that. I'm not raising no grown kids because you're not about to be talking to somebody the way you want to. Like, earlier, my daughter was like, grandma, come here. I said, oh, would you stop talking to my mother like that? I will knock you out. Like, so you got to teach them when they're young. But a lot of times, the parents are young themselves and nobody's with them. So it's hard for them to adjust and teach their children.
Yeah.
And this, yo, I seen the other day, this. I'm sorry to cut you off, but I seen the other day this little girl was trying to speak how her teacher speak to her. And the mother was like, why you talking like that? What? You telling the baby not to speak proper English? She like, you keep saying isn't. The word is ain't. I said ain't even in the dictionary.
It's not even a word.
It is now.
Now.
Yeah, now.
But I'm saying that's
put,
not proper English.
They can put bootylicious in the damn dictionary. They're going to find a way for ain't. That's the damn
It's not proper English, though. And then when they get to school, they can't write a damn paper. These kids don't even know how to write their names. You know?
No.
So it's
you
crazy.
They don't even want them to write cursive anymore in school. They stopped teaching
that. They got rid of cursive. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Got rid of cursive. Like, for real?
They actually stopped doing that. You know, it's wild.
And even with the names, like, people are naming their kids some crazy names. And so it's going to be difficult for them when they get to
school. They don't research the background of those names. Names have meanings.
Absolutely.
A lot of times,
like,
you might be calling your kid a demon. Anything.
A power
you don't know.
Shit.
It could be a devil. It could be a whatever.
Like,
but you because you like it, it sounds good. You know, you don't know what you're calling
like
it.
Like, my daughter's name is Shahada, and it means bearing witness to, and her middle name is Naima, living an enjoyable life. So her name means bearing witness to, living an enjoyable life. I wanted to give her a name with some type of meaning that she could live up to. I ain't about to just name a Shaka Jaria and don't know what the hell it means.
Yeah.
But that happens a lot. These people just making up stuff.
Right.
Like, I can't lie about that. There's some names that I just shake my head at. You know, there's some names that have cultural relevance, and I dig that. You know, but at the same time, I don't care what the name is. It, you know, there's no, like, I was reading this thing on Yahoo just today. This man whose name was Jose changed his name, and he couldn't get no job. Like, he filled out applications, couldn't get a job. So he changed his name to Joe, and within 7 days, he had, like, 20 job offers. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so the thing is no matter how we look at it, yes, you know, having a name that with cultural relevance automatically puts you at odds. But I don't think, like, I'm still of that mindset that if I want to name my kid whatever the hell I want to name him, his qualifications or her qualifications should put them ahead of the pack. I know that's not reality, but I will fight for that. I will punch somebody in their forehead and in their throat, you know, to make sure it's right. Because at the end of the day, I'm not going to name my children Sally and Jennifer and those basic names simply because, you know, you're European and that's what you're comfortable with. I'm not here to make you comfortable. I'm here to, you know, my culture is what represents me.
Right. I don't think that you have to name your kids those kind of names, but you want to make sure that if they're going to have a name that it has some meaning and not just because you know, naming your kid after a liquor like Alizé or
think,
you know, stuff like
that,
you know,
those
I mean,
type of things I think is wrong. You know,
yeah,
but
I mean, you know, or naming your kid after a car, Lexus and you know, all this
Mercedes, and she looked like a damn Buick.
Right,
I'm sorry,
you know,
I had a flashback.
But that's true. But I'm just saying, you know,
Friday
that to me is, you know what I'm saying.
No doubt, and I'm in agreement with you. I do think that there's, you know, but see, ignorance begets ignorance. You know, the less you know about something, and you know, the more you're just going to, you know, facilitate it. That's just what it is. If you don't know no better, you ain't gonna do no better. But
and a name is the first impression that somebody has on you. So it's like you could look at a name and not even ever see the person. Like I was watching an experiment on Tyra Banks show, and this was a long time ago because she ain't even got no damn show no more. But she basically she put a list of names, and one of the girls' name was I want to say Alexa or something like that. And the girl was like, "Oh, she's a sweet little Puerto Rican girl, and you know, at home cooking dinner for her husband with 5 kids running around and she pregnant." And then she put up another name and it was Georgette or something. She was like, "Oh, this girl is from down south somewhere, barefoot and in the weeds," or some shit like that. So people judge you automatically on your name. And then when the little kids came, it was innocent little 4-year-olds. So it was people automatically are going to judge you as soon as they see your name, as soon as they hear how you speak, because I might not even know a chick, but if she's speaking all loud and raunchy and she cussing and all carrying on in the middle of the street, I'm going to be like that hood rat. I don't want to judge her.
You know, like you said, they say with the, you know, using your resume, and you know, they only have so much time to look at your resume. A lot of times they look at your resume and they see a name. They're like, I'm not even gonna go into that, you know, because it's Shaquita or something. They're not gonna pick it.
They don't care if she got a PhD.
Yeah,
she might have a degree from Harvard or whatever. They don't care.
I
don't want to deal with it. She got attitude. Shaquita, no.
That's what they think about black women. Period.
Yeah, but look at Condoleezza Rice. You know what I'm saying? When you think about that name, they got 13 syllables. In her name, in her first name.
Yeah, but how many black people you know named Condoleezza?
But exactly. So you automatically head thinking she black. But my point
not really.
They
probably knew she was
black,
but then like you said, they had to look a little deeper for her, you know, because she's gifted, she's got all these things going on. But you're right. I mean,
my name.
I don't know no other Condoleezza. When you say Condoleezza, that's the only name. That's the only person that comes to my mind when you hear that. When you say that name, it's her.
My first name is ethnic. You know what I'm saying? And so, and this is what I've learned. You know, even though my first name is ethnic, you always, you know, the same tropes. You got to work twice as hard and be twice as good as the next person, simply for them to recognize you. So right now, I'm working for an oil company. you know. And, you know, when I submitted my resume, I automatically knew they were probably going to throw mine in the garbage pile simply because of my first name. My last name's Smith, you know, you know, but...
And I would say, like, Smith. The same thing already, for,
Tyrone Smith or something?
You know, like,
I would say,
no,
like,
my name
the Blackity. Same thing.
My name Blackity Smith.
You I would Blackity say the Smith. Same thing for my husband because, like, his birth name is Antoine and his last name is Jones. But then when he became Muslim, he changed his name. And so he was telling me earlier today, I was like, well, why did you keep Antoine and change the rest of your name? And he was like, because, like, you know, that gives me a fair shot. If I would just say that my name is Mazi Ukhtu, like, people would think, like, I'm a Habibi or I'm not who I am. So it's like, it's hard for him to, like, part ways with the Antoine.
But it's not even so much as that. Because the thing is, as black people and as black men, we've come to the realization that in order to feed our family, we have to make sacrifices. And sometimes that sacrifice is keeping a name, even though it's not the name that we'd rather use. You know, and the same thing with black women. I see black women going natural all the time. When 10 years ago, if you were going natural, you probably couldn't get a job. There was even black women was talking about you like you was a dog.
That's why, if you notice, even with white women at work, if you notice, a lot of white women do not wear fingernail polish. They'll have toenail polish on, but they don't wear fingernail polish. But you see black women.
I don't wear fingernail polish.
But you see black women, they have them all the time, and they use that as a say that that woman is lazy. Oh, she's lazy because she's got her fingernails done. So they use that
as a way of picking and choosing.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, they always have categorized us as Jezebels, Mammy, Sapphire characters. And they
mammy,
even went with
Mammy. Yeah, Mammy. They love Mammy. Mammy
yeah, Mammy, Jezebel, and Sapphire.
They
wanna, and,
they
wanna, you know,
they
always categorize.
Mammy's titty. They want to be on Mammy's titty. She's good enough to wet nurse her titty, but that's it.
Yeah, we're good. You know, we're good enough to be wet nurses, just not good enough to be treated equal, huh?
Right, exactly.
You know, and they always categorize Michelle Obama as a sapphire. So this is something that is going to plague us forever because this is, when they look at black women, they always think and she thinks she's too independent. You know, she's too sexy. She's too this. She's too that. And even when we watch TV, there's always, like I'm watching on my TV right now, there's a show playing called That Girl. And this one girl, she's just like, she got purple hair, she work in the office, but she ghetto. And then they have, like, another girl, she's, like, stuck up. So these are the nemesis that they put on us as black women. And so we already stepped out the box with the stereotype attached to us. So we have to set ourselves away from everybody else.
That's why I'm saying that every time you see most
of
these
black
women
in movies, black women.
And Tyler Perry's movies the same. I'm not dogging him. I'm just saying, period, because that's what we got right now. But the thing is, you know, the black woman is always in the movie, is always a strong woman, has always got an attitude, always want to be, you know, her man is weak, and he's scared if he go tell her that he bought something from the store, he's going to kick his ass, you know, stuff like that. You know, I get tired of seeing all that same old shit. And that's not true. That's not always true. Not every woman acts like that. Not every man is weak to a black woman who's scared of her like that. You know, it's just crazy how they do. They make it seem like, oh, even with the white man that's with the black woman, he's scared too. He's trying to be a brother, and he's trying to act, you know, I mean, just like with
but it wouldn't matter.
That Tyler Perry, Steve Harvey, the other movie. What's that movie that's Think Like a Man, whatever? You know, all that mess.
But see, remember,
you know,
it wouldn't matter how black women were. Because at the end of the day, white women are, no matter how much they dog them, you know, they're like, oh, I can't stand her lips, her butt, whatever, and now they out there, big lips, big butt. I can't stand the way they dance. The thing is, there are a lot of white people out there that embrace black culture until it's time to be black. And all of a sudden,
but they've been doing it for years.
But what I'm saying is, when you think
about
when
they used to describe,
white women go
even
to
when
get tan, they want to look like us.
Right.
Even when they used to describe a man, what was a white woman used to say back in the 40s and 50s? I want a tall, dark, handsome man. Tall, dark.
Yeah.
That's what they used to always say all the time.
White women could be, black women could be docile. Black women could be perfect, you know, minority, and they would still find a way to denigrate her. Because at the end of the day, even because if you're a white woman and you're independent, oh, that's celebrated. If you're a black woman independent, it's, that's why you're single. You see what I'm saying? So the thing is, it wouldn't matter what you did, no matter how positive it is or, you know, whatever you accomplished, everybody wants to put you into this stereotypical category where they can debase you, where they can feel good about themselves by saying, you ain't shit because this is what you are. You roll your neck. You know, how many times have you seen a commercial where white people are doing the things black? I've seen commercials where white people are rapping. I've seen commercials where white people are dancing. You know what I'm saying? Hell, I saw
they use all the music, even the music they use for the background in these commercials
are music from us. You know, and that's
or even if it's old school or whatever. Yeah, it's the same thing.
Think about all of the things that black people use or have used within the last 20 years that you found on some commercial promoting something. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I didn't see, you know, white people moonwalking, talking about, is this deaf, is this hip, is this dope, you know what I'm saying, in a commercial. So the thing is I was like, look, if we got paid, you know, for our own culture instead of having it robbed from us, there would be a lot more wealthy black people. Wealthy,
mm-hmm.
not rich. You know what I'm saying? They would be wealthy. But
mm-hmm.
the thing is, we can't even patent everything that we do, and everyone else steals it for their benefit. You know, how long has twerking been around before all of a sudden Miley Cyrus invented twerking, and now they have been twerking exercise classes? You know, think about it. You know,
it's true.
These
it's just like
they tell us
back in the day when
look
to...
at how nasty they dance, and as soon as somebody Caucasian does it, it's like, oh, well, she's, you know, look how raw she is. Look how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but look like
and
a big chicken's ass. Don't nobody care about Miley Cyrus twerking her butt. Look like a chicken. Oh, gosh.
But my
anyway,
point is,
I understand what your point is.
Do. Whenever we've done something or whenever we've accomplished something, they look at us with disdain. And they tell us, okay, well, you know, how dare you know, when, don't get me wrong, I can't stand see little kids twerk. I couldn't, when I was in Florida 20 years ago, I couldn't stand it. You know,
mm-hmm.
but now all of a sudden it's this new big thing. You know,
mm-hmm.
and it pisses me off because no one wants to give credit where credit is due, but they're happy to steal it from you and call it their own. You know, they've done it with music. They've done it with just about anything that you can name that black people have contributed to American society, whether it be from inventions, whether it be from entertainment, it has been stolen and profited by somebody who was not us. Because there is not a single black person in the continent of North America who has profited solely off their idea without somebody coming and stealing it. Period.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
There, no black person anywhere is allowed to have their own idea. Somebody. No, Eli Whitney was a white dude.
Right. But the idea came from a black man. He just patented
it. But think about it. You know, think about the, you know, hey, Gary Morgan. You know, think about, you know, no, there's still Edison's getting paid off the light bulb. But the Gary Morgan family, even though he created the stoplight, they dead broke. All right? They have
of
never
course.
Profited from his idea.
No, and that's
so,
used internationally. Internationally.
Right. It's like on the planet. Everyone on the planet is a freaking stoplight, all right?
Yeah.
And the Gary Morgan family has never made, once they sold that idea because they had to, they have never profited from it. You know, whatever we have contributed, whether it be the air conditioner, the refrigerator, whatever, you know, everybody else is profiting off of it, and the people who created the ideas, if they black, they broke as hell. The guy who created the 3G and 4G network, all right, he can never profit off of his idea. He's a black dude. I can't remember his name. His name is Dr. It'll come to me. But because he works for a phone company, they say, hey, this idea is ours, not yours. So
yeah, that's what they do.
They're making,
and you know who
else
is good at that, too? A lot of contractors, from military contractor stuff, is like that, too. You can come up with an idea, but guess what? When you present the idea and everything to them and everything, they own it.
But that's the thing.
They might give you a little stipend of money, maybe $1,000 or something like that to come up with the idea, but then they make millions off of it.
Well, when you think about the Bill Gates and the Mark Zuckerbergs of the world, they're allowed to keep their idea and they're allowed to profit from it. Every last one of them. You know what I'm saying? Now they're 50 sticking rich. They're billionaires. You know, they could buy whatever 10 times over, but all I'm saying is this, that like I said, they constantly tell us that nobody looks like us is ever succeeding. But when we finally get people that look like us that succeed, they go and buy the idea and tell us that we never had anything to do with it in the first place.
Right. Well, you know, we talked about a lot of things that they've stolen. Just like a lot of people, the biggest story that we had the last few weeks was the Three Musketeers. You know, how we talked about the Arthur of the Three Musketeers and all of that. You know, they don't even want to admit that that guy is black. You know, he was black.
Yeah.
But,
and,
you know
we
because the idea was what it was, you know, and they've made so many different ways of the Three Musketeers with D'Artagnan. I mean, because the story was so excellent, and the other stories he's written as well, the man with the iron mask and all that, they just don't want to give it to him because they don't want it to be a black man's ideal.
Well, that's the thing. You hear about anything from the Romantic period, you always hear about, you know, whether it was, Shakespeare or whoever created it, they're glad to tell you their name. If it was a black person,
right.
You know, it's like you would think the first time, you know, that the Three Musketeers was a TV show because they never tell
right.
you the author or the person that created it. You know, but
yeah.
every time you go around, you're hearing, you know, some play written by Shakespeare, that was just this, that, and the other. Oh, yeah. You know, you get that forced down your throat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just like with science fiction. Nobody talks about Octavia Butler or none of that. You know, she was a black female science fiction writer. Nobody wants to talk
right.
about those people because they feel like, well, we don't know nothing about that, or they don't care about that. You know,
and I think that is up to us to bring it to the forefront.
It is a lot.
I,
of, and what I was getting ready to say,
we're
going to write all the urban
on my
fiction.
Show.
Right, we want to write nothing wrong with urban fiction and all that. But you know, we're writing all these different things, and we're not really putting ourselves out like we could. I'm guilty
well,
too. We're putting ourselves out and what we think could sell instead of trying to let people see.
Right.
That there's more to life than selling drugs and all that or whatever, or sex or whatever. You know what I'm saying? It's just
you don't know what you don't know. And like I told somebody, it's not the writing that sets the standard, it's the author. Because if you write something differently and other authors catch on, then they set the trend, not the other way around. People who
right.
read will read anything, right?
Right.
And I hate the idea that, well, you know, people only read about stories that where people look like them. There were people, long before they were telling stories about us, we were still reading. You know what I'm saying? But my belief system is this. When our people got out of slavery, they didn't say, well, slavery's the only thing I know. I'm going to write a book about slavery. You know what I'm saying? The imagination is a wonderful thing. You can write anything you choose to.
Some of them started getting into sharecropping, but, you know, that was because they didn't know nothing else.
No.
But you're right.
But what I'm saying is,
let's understand this. Every black person wasn't a slave, as we know. All
right.
The blacks weren't slaves, and there were some blacks that owned slaves. So let's just stop thinking like we were all slaves and nobody, you know, we got dogged out. And just like everybody's talking about they got Indian in them, guess how they got the Indian in them? They got them in
that's
them because
good.
The Indians own slaves. That's
that,
how they
that,
got it in them.
You
know,
that was
see, people don't, they want
to talk.
Oh,
like Indian thing, I'm still hearing it. Yes.
You know, they don't want to talk
we
about
it. We got off into a whole history lesson tonight.
That's
guys.
What I'm saying.
Good job.
I'm proud of y'all. Y'all make me cry.
Well, you know, I got a degree in history, believe it or not. And I do write historical fiction as well. So, I mean, I try to put stuff together that's not always just about what today. You know, I like to talk about things that happened in different eras and add history into it, that actual, you know, have my characters walking around during a time when something was really going on, you know, like the creation. Like in one book I wrote, the Klan was developed, and they were dealing with the Klan and stuff like that. So, I mean, you know, it's just different things. People sometimes don't want to read this stuff, but the reason why they don't want to talk about it or they get mad about slavery, because it ain't talked about enough. If it was talked about enough, it was known enough that it's our history, not just black history, then people will get over it and can move forward. But they can't because they don't want to talk about it. They keep pushing it under the rug or whatever. It's like 12 Years of Slavery. Everybody was mad about
that.
Yeah,
I was trying to write a book about some historical fiction, and I was told that nobody would read it. And
well, you should write it anyway.
Like, oh, it's...
You write for you. Don't ever let anybody tell you. Because you know what? They said the same thing about Erotica when it first came out. Nobody would read that kind of filth. And now look at Erotica. You know what I'm saying?
Everybody's writing it. Now, you got authors that normally don't write erotica. You got authors that normally don't write erotica trying to put in some erotica books, too, because they want to get it, too. Like Treasure Blue. Mm-hmm. Treasure Blue is a good author. He's a good brother out mm-hmm. there. He's writing. He's got some erotica out there now.
Mm-hmm.
He's usually writing, urban fiction and stuff like that. These people mm-hmm. are dibbling and dabbling and trying to see, because that's what you should do as an artist anyway, is try to write out of the box, like you said, and do other
mm-hmm.
things as well, not just stay in the same old rim or
same
whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is,
I always try to think different. I want to write everything.
We create the trend. The trend doesn't create the author. So the thing is, if the trend created you, if you was like, I want to write, you know, urban fiction because other people are writing for urban fiction, you will never last. You know, that's the one thing that the great authors have always done. They have set the trend. They didn't let the trend set them. If they had a story to tell, they let it out. It didn't matter if it was science fiction. It didn't matter if it was, you know, religious. It didn't matter if it was, you know, an autobiography. You know, they told the story that they wanted to tell, and people follow. And that's what people do. You put a good-ass story out, and people will follow you. It doesn't matter what genre you're under.
Mm,
yes, exactly.
I agree.
Look at Walter Mosley. He writes everything. He's got something out there of any type of genre, basically. He didn't let himself get stuck in just one area of something. You know, he's writing, and he's still writing. So, you know, you just got to, as a writer, you want to be able to test the waters on other things. And like you said, write for yourself. Yeah, you want an audience, but if you keep writing for them, you're never going to put what you really want out there. They told you not
absolutely.
To write
something. And everything is not for everybody. You know, people would read it and some people wouldn't. Like,
and I don't write for black people. I'm tired of blacks writing for blacks. Write for people who like
everybody.
To read.
Everybody. Absolutely. I agree.
You know, have your characters
even in the language
black,
of
mix them up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, another thing that gets me, we always talk about this on the show, the light-skinned women that be in the books is always the ones that everybody wants, and the black-skinned woman is always the hoe. I get tired of that.
I try to write
shit.
A variety. I wrote one character, like, in my Gossip Village book. She kind of fat. She wasn't skinny, wasn't perfect. Like, she was a fat girl.
Yeah,
like, she had roles.
People.
She had three kids. Like, ain't no, I know a few that snapped back, but I got one and I got a little baby fat left over. So it's like you walking down the street averagely, you might not find some perfect little gem. Like,
that's
so
why,
we have
that's
to get away from
out.
That.
That's why it trips me out when people say they get in these books, like especially urban. I have to use urban because everybody uses this as an example. They see themselves in the book, but they don't really see themselves in the book because, like you said, the characters always got nice bodies. They always find
they
the dudes got abs and shit. Well, that ain't
got
you.
Hair down to their butt.
That's your fantasy. Yeah, that ain't you. You ain't writing about no nigga with nappy hair and fat and all this stuff,
like,
you know?
I can't tell you how many women I've seen with green eyes and purple eyes and gray eyes, and it's
right.
just like
half mixed with Puerto Rican and all this. They gotta be mixed with something.
Yeah, being totally black is, you know, can't do that. You know, like it's demeaning to make a black character in the book who's completely black.
Right.
And
yeah.
you know that kind of you know as much as you know as much as I love our people, I wish we did more of that. I wish we wrote stories, you know, about how we look, not about how. You know, how we think people want people to look in books. The whole thing
mm-hmm.
is fiction. It's fiction. And yet, you know, you're going to give me a character that doesn't look like anybody on planet Earth.
Absolutely.
I mean,
like, I read one book where this book was by Saeed Salam. And he basically, like, had this character. She was beautiful and all of that. And when the guy got her home, she came out the bathroom with no hair and no butt. Like, no breast. She had, like, on a padded bra. And her natural stuff was hanging out. So it was like... You know, this is the facade that people, what he was trying to get at is that this is the facade that people put on when that's not really their real self. So we have to be mindful of that.
Yeah.
You sound like I'm sucking.
It just got very quiet.
Oh, no. I was listening. I was just listening because it's interesting. You know, we started out talking a bunch of shit. And we got serious, which is good. And that's one thing I like about the show, because we always, you know, it goes one way, it can go another way, it can go whatever. You know, a lot of times, you know, we get on. So, and I like to get serious like this sometimes when we do talk, because you know, it needs to be heard. People need to hear this and understand that it ain't always about whatever. I mean, we write in our different genres and whatever we do. But the thing is we know what we need to do to try to get it out there. And DV said it right to you. If you want to write something in history, historical fiction, don't let nobody stop you from doing that. Just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to have somebody, trust me, out of every three people that don't like your stuff, it's going to be five that is going to like it or whatever. It's going to be somebody that wants to see something different in you. Just like you said earlier, your books, I think it was you that said,
mm-hmm.
all your books are different. People look at your books, they like, that was totally different than what you had last time. Well, that's what you got to give them, something different with twists and stuff so that they can see that it's different.
Absolutely.
You know, write history. Write about something. You know, write about a slave book or whatever, or whatever you want to write. It don't have to be slavery. It could be whatever. Just, you know, just do something different. Be in the 50s when doing the,
my
you know,
goal
the
is to write like a
60s,
a futuristic type of book. I want to write something that's in the future rather than
well,
in the present.
The only thing, the only thing about that is you just got to make sure that when you use scientific method stuff that it works. Don't make up something.
No, I'm talking
that
about like
the
technology. Like, I think that technology is taking over the world. So I want to write something about that aspect of the future, that sooner or later
like
we're going to have like micro trips in our fingers.
Like
and let me
like
not
I
talk
said.
Too much. Somebody might steal my book idea.
Ain't nobody going to steal your idea. But let me tell you this. The thing
you
is,
never know who's listening.
All
who
I'm
going to
tell
watching.
You is when you write it, make sure that the scientific piece of it can work. Because people that read your stuff is going to check to see if they're really into scientific and sci-fi, they're going to check and see if that method actually works.
Mm-hmm.
If it doesn't, they're going to be like, I ain't going with this. You know what I'm saying? You understand what I'm
mm-hmm.
saying? If you're going to use a method like saying that there's a type of energy that works with something that makes this happen, you got to make sure that you researched it to make sure it works. That's all I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I
if
agree.
You're going to use technology, make sure the technology is attainable, or if it's not invented yet, that there at least mm-hmm. research on it that to get to. That's all I'm saying.
Man, look, future, you can create anything, shit.
Mm-hmm.
Look, you can create, like, you know, we get underwear that soaks up RP and who cares? I mean, shit, it's the future. You know, so you can essentially create any idea just as long as, you know, the technology that you're consistent. You know what I'm saying? Everything has a purpose and reason. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to just create anything and then never come back to it because people are like, that's dumb.
Right.
So, I mean, that's my biggest problem. I got too many
but
ideas.
But, you know, I think you should write what you want to. And your audience, if they like your writing style, they're going to follow you. If they don't like it, then they won't read it. But it's going to be somebody that will. You can't give up. You just got to write and just do it. And those who don't like that, you'll pick up some others that do. But you got to just, the biggest thing is marketing yourself and getting yourself out there where people will know that you write that way. That's the biggest thing.
Absolutely.
So that's what you just have to do. So, you know, like you said, you don't want to be stuck in just one genre of this. And just because you never experienced something doesn't mean you can't write in it. We talk about this all the time on the show, too. Do research and find out about it. I mean, people don't kill all the time, but they write about murder and stuff happening in books. You know,
yeah, I never killed nobody.
You know,
I never sold no drugs.
They write about stuff like if you want to write about a scary whatever, a ghost, which is real hard to do. You got to really keep people's interest when you do that. And you have to be able to, you know, you may not have never seen a ghost, but you got to write, you know, what you've seen or what you've read. Do research. Look
mm-hmm.
at other books that people write in that genre that you're trying to write in and see how they develop their stuff. There's nothing wrong with doing that. You know, you can take that and develop yours from their example. That's what you have to do. Just like somebody was on the show, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, they was talking about this guy was writing erotica and it didn't get him hot and it was fucked up with the way he was writing it. I'm like, he didn't go and read some erotica somewhere else and see how it was written to get an example of what he needs to try to go by? I mean, it just don't make sense. I think he was just doing that because he wanted to get with her. He just wanted her to write something and hope that she would get hot and that he would get with her. That's what that thing. But I don't know. You just have to do that. But my thing is you know, if you're an author, you should be able to try anything. You should want to be out of the box and try whatever you want to write and just do that and be happy with it. You know, if you're happy and you know that you did everything you can to make it a good product, somebody's going to read it. They're going to like it. And maybe if they don't like it, then, you know, that doesn't mean you stop. Tell them to tell you why they didn't like it. What was the reason why it was messed up to them, you know?
Absolutely.
Or if they tell you, well, I'm just used to you writing about urban, then just read my urban shit then. Don't read this other stuff, you know. You know, that's just it, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. We have to just go for what you want, regardless of the fact. And if it's for you, then it's going to be for you. And if not, then you just keep striving hard.
Yep, just like you say, you're a writer, so you should be able to do that. You know, people that just want to write in one genre, if they choose to do that, there's nothing wrong with it. But my thing is you're selling yourself short if you don't try something else.
Exactly.
That doesn't mean it's right. That's just my opinion. So, DV, what's up? Well, before we go, listen, because we got like 14 minutes. Tell people how they can get your book if they want to get you for a book signing or whatever they need you to do. How would they be able to get to you?
You can always inbox me on Facebook at Yaira Kalima. You can email me, swagproductions2014@gmail.com. You can purchase my books on Amazon if you're a Kindle reader, or you could inbox me or email me and ask me for autographed copies. I also have a children's book entitled Samara's Trip to the Masjid. So that's also available on Amazon, but only in paperback. So if you want to autograph one, of course, you could contact me for that. You could like my page, Please Don't Kill Me, Domestic Violence Awareness, and tune into my shows, Swag Radio and Gossip Village.
What's the name of the show?
Come on? Now, when does the show come on?
Gossip Village comes on Wednesdays at 10 Central, 11 Eastern. And Swag Radio comes on Fridays and Saturdays, 5:30 Central, 6:30 Eastern.
Okay, so you got two shows.
Yes.
You're off the chain, see? At one point, I thought about doing Word Sexy more than once a week. I was thinking about doing it like once or twice a week, but it's just, you know, we've been running this show, and we took, a year off. We was running it for 5 straight years before we stopped for a year, and then we came back. But I tell you, it's something to do just the one show. I mean, I would love to be an XM radio DJ and just have a show there, and we just do this all day long, and just, you know, just different segments where we record them, of course, and put them on there. But it would be nice to have that.
And if there are any authors, if there are any authors listening who are interested in being on Swag Radio, please feel free to contact me. I'm also a part of a blog tour with several other bloggers, whether it be radio or internet interviews. Inbox me on Facebook or email me at swagproductions2014@gmail.com, and we could take care of that.
Yeah, we want to be on the show, too. Just because we have a radio show doesn't mean we want to be interviewed. So,
true that.
My little
thing. We can make that happen.
I
have three shows open on Swag Radio for September, and I have all of my shows open in October. So just inbox me on Facebook, and we can make it happen.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, DV, you got anything else? You want to get on an interview, DV? He's writing. He's trying to act like he ain't doing nothing, but I know he's going to bust,
I'm a completionist. I'd rather talk about things after they finish than while I'm running through them, so.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
well,
know,
when you get done, get at me. I know you would love to listen to my voice some more, so come
all
listen
right
to either
you
of my shows.
Man, around your dude, man. I don't want to jump out of nowhere and, you know, karate chop me in my throat.
Yeah.
You're terrible.
Yeah.
Support is support, no matter where it comes from.
That's true.
We're glad that you wanted to come on the show, and I'm glad. How did you hear about Word Sexy Radio? Did somebody tell you that
I don't even know. For some reason, you was following me on Facebook, or we was following each other, and I was like, "Oh, we got a show. Let's hop on this. Let's do this."
I followed you. I was after you. Is that what you're saying?
No. That's not what I'm trying to say. I'm just saying we was on the social network. I saw you somewhere, and I said, "Hey, I gotta go get the opportunity. It ain't gonna come to me. Don't nobody know I'm an author unless I say so, right?" So, bam.
Right. Yeah, and I probably put it out there because I was looking for authors. I said, well, you know, authors want to come on the show and invite me, blah, blah. And I do that every now and then, just get some people. I like to have two people on the show because, you know, sometimes the other person may not show up or something. And, you know, whatever, we can usually keep the show going between ourselves as well. We have a lady on our show as well. Her name is Miss Cotton, a poet. She's usually a poet person. When we have poetry on the show, she's usually the one that...
Why is this thirsty-ass guy in my inbox talking about he horny? Get the freak out my inbox. What is wrong with you?
Oh, damn. He's horny.
Bruh, I don't give a fuck about your zingling. You better go tell the mother of that baby you holding a... What?
Oh, man. He's holding a baby. He's asking you... Whoa.
What? I'm like, are you an author? Like, why the hell are you in my inbox? Get out of here. Stop it.
Probably listened to the show when you said if they want to come on the show, inbox me. And he's like, okay.
But you make come on the show.
No, he said that before. He said hi before that. I'm like, wait, hold the phone. This not business. Get away from here. Silly cat.
Well, I tell you what, that's something else. You got people coming at you like, well, we thank you for coming on the show and everything. And,
absolutely.
You know, is there anything, any last thoughts or words you want to give out to people about any subject, domestic violence or anything like that you want to share before we, because we got like 9 minutes. I want you to kind of get whatever you want to say out before we go.
I think I said everything that I had to say. But I will say that this. If you have a dream, go for it. Dreams are real, and all you have to do is believe in yourself and keep praying and, you know, make sure that you understand that whatever you're dreaming about is not too big and it's not too late. It's never too late to pursue your dreams, even if that means you have to go back to school and get your GED. Do what you got to do. You know, work
absolutely
hard.
True,
and don't
there
let the work you. You know?
There you go. I like that. DV, you got anything else?
No, sir.
Well, as always, it's been a great show, and we thank everybody for listening. And come in next week. We got some more people that's going to be on. I don't have the list in front of me of who's going to be here, but believe me, it's going to be off the chain. So we're going to do our thing. And we thank you for tuning in to Word Sexy Radio, and we out.